The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Book of Serenity. Zhaozhou's wash your bowl. The pointer. When food comes, you open your mouth. When sleep comes, you close your eyes. As you wash your face, you find your nose. When you take off your shoes, you feel your feet. At that time, if you miss what's being said, take a torch and make a special search deep in the night. How can you attain union? Main case. A student asked Master Zhaozhou, I've just entered the monastery. Please give me some guidance. Zhaozhou said, have you had breakfast yet? The monastic said, yes, I've eaten. Zhaozhou said, then go wash your bowl. The poem. Breakfast over, the direction is to wash the bowl. Opened up, the mind ground meets of itself. And now, a guest of the monastery, having studied to the full, but was there enlightenment in there or not? The koan is a way in, a way to come in, a way to come in and encounter something on an intimate level. And so there are koans that steal away everything we cling to. And in case that leads the student to turn away from the world, there are koans that present the world. And because it is not a world, it appears as the world. There are koans that help to guard from nothing and something becoming enemies of each other. There are koans that help to free the student of attaining union, to free them from non-attachment, to free them from freeing themselves. And all of that is because we are wily creatures, right? We let go of one grasp hold and we grab onto another. We realize that there is no abiding basis and we make that an abiding basis. And most of the time, it's not conscious, it's not willful, it's just habit, and deeper than that, too. This case shows up in the Wumenkan, the Gateless Gate, in the poem that Wuman wrote, said, because it is so very close, it takes longer to come to realization. If you know at once that candlelight is fire, then for you the meal, you now see, has long been cooked. Because it is so very close, it's hard to find it, to experience it. If that which we were seeking could be found outside over the hill, we'd all be there. We're good at that. Robert Thurman talks about Buddhist practitioners as being inner astronauts. And the pointer gives us a pointing. When the food comes, you open your mouth. Sleep comes, close your eyes. When you wash your face, you find your nose. Everyday ordinary moments. They come and go. They pass often without notice because they're ordinary. When I was living in New York and at the temple for those years and being out on the streets, on the subway, particularly on the streets, people walking, crossing streets, sometimes with the children at hand or in a stroller and somebody looking into their phone. And I began thinking of all those moments as in-between moments. This is a moment that's in between something that was worthy of my attention and the next thing that'll be worthy of my attention. This isn't. Walking down the street on a glorious day, passing people, being aware. I was thinking of a story Dada Roshi told of when he was at Zen Center Los Angeles. He was in a meeting and he snuck out to go have a cigarette. He used to smoke a lot. So he went upstairs into an attic or something, he said, opened a window, sat down to smoke a cigarette. A few minutes later, my Zumi Roshi, who had also been in the meeting, showed up. Sat down, asked Dino for a cigarette. They both started smoking. And Dino Roshi started chatting with him. And my Zumi Roshi said, "Dot, dot, dot, just smoke." Dino Roshi used to say, "All the way to heaven is heaven itself. If we're climbing the mountain, we're preoccupied with the peak, we miss the mountain. And the peak is the only thing that matters. When we get to the peak, what makes us think we'll be able to be there if we haven't been there every step along the way?" What is being pointed to here? We recognize our activities are wondrous in their simplicity, simple, plain like water. You can't live without it. It runs through us. But it's not enough. So often we need to dress it up. To value, to really see the depth within that which is unadorned, uncontrived. It's kind of revolutionary in our culture. But therein we see the depth. And I've seen it over and over in practice, particularly with koans. I saw it within myself. When a student gets stuck on a koan, which means simply means there's something that's not being seen, something that's not clear, the koan presents that to them in a way that's understood, in a sense, almost planned, you might say, but still has an innocence. Because the stuckness is not in the koan, it's not in the dialogue, it's in the student's mind. That's the whole point. I used to get very frustrated when I would get stuck, which happened a lot, sometimes for long periods of time. And the longer I got stuck, the longer something was not clear, the easier it was to start feeling bad about myself. Who am I kidding? Nothing I've ever done has been anything. I have no understanding at all. It was the worst when I had to give a talk. It was the worst when I had to give a talk and I went into Doksan before I had to give the talk and I was defeated again and I thought, okay, I shouldn't even open my mouth. I have nothing to offer. And then at a certain point, after some years of misery, self-induced, I began to think of it differently and thought, the reason I'm stuck on this is because there's something that is not clear to me. That's all. There's something that is not clear to me. The koan is presenting that to me. It's just not yet clear. And that helped to shift it. But what tends to happen is the student gets intellectual. They start turning towards the conceptual mind because that's always at the ready. Right? Your thinking mind is always there ready to give you something. Something big, something rich, something complicated, something to explain. And so the student starts not trusting the koan. There's something missing here. There's not enough. And then the student starts to try and figure it out. And they just get further and further away. And so what's difficult is to actually go back into it and strip it down. Strip it down. Simple, like water. It says, if you miss this, if we miss this, then take a torch and make a special search deep in the night to turn the light around. The fifth ancestor, Hongren, said, calm yourself, quiet your senses, look right into the source of your mind, and always keep it shining bright, clear, and pure. This is what the Buddha realized. And it's not unique, right? There are lots of it's not that uncommon an understanding that we need to look within ourselves, right? You see that on greeting cards or advertisements or matchbook covers or whatever. But what does it mean? Look inside yourself. Where exactly? Looking for what? How? What are you supposed to find? It's easy to say. So here this student comes to Master Zhaozhou, was one of the great sort of luminous teachers of Chan, Chinese Buddhism. He came to enlightenment at 18, precocious, studied with his teacher Nanquan for 40 years. Nanquan died. He continued to teach and serve at that monastery for some years. And then at the age of 80, I think, he went on a pilgrimage, traveling, and then settled in the town of Xiaozhou, which he took the name of, and died at 120. This would be a formidable teacher. I think he had one successor. Hard to please. You just had to live a long time to make it with him. And so here a student comes to him and says, I've just entered the monastery. Please give me some guidance. And there is in the record of Master Xiaozhou, his recorded teachings, there are several instances where a student begins this way. I've just entered the monastery, another student said. I don't have any understanding. I beg for your teachings. And Xiaozhou says, you've just entered the monastery. Anything more than that is not understanding. Anything more than that will not help you. You have just entered. To enter into training, to enter the way, is not just a matter of walking through a door. There's something that happens. There's something that is happening. It often begins, and we don't really recognize it. We don't understand it. I remember we had a student, Shoso, who was a student here for many years. I remember the first day he came on a Sunday. And I remember him because downstairs after the talk, he was standing in the middle of the dining room, his eyes as big as saucers, just standing there looking around. And I went up and I said, hi, how are you? He goes, what the hell just happened up there? He says, what just happened? He was pretty dramatic. And before I could say a word, he says, never mind, it's none of my business. And he was already on to something. Before he understanding, he understood, don't try and figure this out. He had already entered without knowing, and it was scaring him just a little bit. Buddhism understands that. In fact, the Buddha said in early sutras, if we encounter the Dharma and are not scared, then maybe we're a little ready, a little bit ready. When food comes, we open our mouth. When sleep comes, you close your eyes. We can miss this. In fact, we do all the time. We can live in a world of our own creations. That's how powerful our mind is. We create a mental image consciously, usually unconsciously. It arises. It becomes real to us. How do we know? Because I react to it. You react to it. It's like dreaming. In fact, that's the analogy that's used in Buddhism and has been used forever because everybody can relate to it. You're dreaming, mental images, conversations, things happening. And in the dream, it's real. You're sweating, you're aroused, you're afraid, you're delighted. And then we wake up and we realize, oh, I was dreaming. It wasn't real. But in the dream, it seemed real. And the Dharma teaches this is like that. And so in those many worlds we create, we miss the one true world we're in. And then before you know it, we're dead. And we wonder, before that, where did it go? What happened? How did I get here? Or we can come into practice with so much understanding, a cup that's overflowing, there's no room to receive anything. So what's the point? Or we can come so attached to what we do not understand and be unwilling to let go of that. A student often say to a student working on Mu who comes in so resolute that they don't yet, haven't yet experienced Mu, I said, don't be attached to the sense, notion, the idea that you have, but don't be attached to the notion that you haven't. They're both attachments. They both close doors. Don't know. Or we can just enter. That's what Xiaozhou said. You have entered. Anything more than that? Another student at another time came to Xiaozhou and said, I've just entered the monastery. I ask you for instruction, teacher. Xiaozhou said, good heavens! The sky cracks. Have you eaten? Xiaozhou says. And this is an excellent example of a very ordinary conversation, right? Teacher arrives, must have been morning. Have you eaten yet? It's a common courtesy. Should we get you some food? No, I've eaten. Is Xiaozhou asking the student about food? Have you had your breakfast? Is Xiaozhou asking this student about Dharma? Have you seen something? Do you understand? The koan doesn't tell you that. Asking a simple question, the student will respond from where they are, where they find themselves. The student is teaching the teacher how to teach them. How have you, you've arrived at the monastery, but on what place are you standing? What do you see? What do you know? What do you expect? Who is this standing before me? In the commentary it says, catching a dragon is an enlightened being, with a straight hook, which takes some skill. It's a straight hook. So to catch a dragon with a straight hook, but the commentary says this is already a little dull. Or standing 3 inches apart from the hook is already to be taken over by the boatsman and Jiushan. Jiushan was a teacher who was fishing, went fishing for students of the way. And so on one hand, to be caught by a straight hook is already not enough. There's more. Or to be 3 inches away from the hook is already to be caught, which is true for the one who is seeking, who is ready when their mind is ripe. Have you eaten yet? The monastic says, yes, I've eaten. Xiaozhou said, then go wash your bowl. What is this? Ordinary language being used in an extraordinary way. So the nature of language in its ordinary usage is it means something. Have you had your breakfast means a particular thing. That's the point of words, is they have meaning, they convey a point. But words, like all things, have no fixed value. We give them value. And we can see that value as fixed, or we can see that value as expansive. And words, in that sense, are like people. We can give them a value, and we do, or we can see them as expansive, as universes, as miracles on two legs, as bodhisattvas, as Buddhas. That's the power of the mind. But in Buddhism, it's not just a matter of positive thinking. Let's all think generously. I vow that I'm going to see every human being as a Buddha, but don't cut me off on the throughway. I will see you as a Buddha, but you have to stay in line. Okay? Do we have an agreement? No, we don't, exactly. And so it has to come from a place that is not just agreement, although agreements are good. Let's have more of them, please. But they're precarious. We agree as long as we agree to. The Buddha realized that's not and will never be truly liberating. Within us, between us. It has to be based in what we actually are, the way things actually are. Not an opinion, not a view. Not a decision. Breakfast Over, the poem says, the direction is to wash the bowl. Opened up, the mind ground meets of itself. This mind ground, the essential nature of our mind. When you sit on this cushion, as those of you who've been here for the weekend are, some for the first time, some you've already been practicing, you're looking into your mind ground. The essential nature of your mind. It may not be clear yet, not because it's not present, but it's just not clear yet. It has never been anywhere else. It cannot be anywhere else. Where would it be? In the mind ground box that we keep in a vault. And when you've come a certain number of times, we take you down to the vault and we open up and we give you your mind graph. And then if you're bad, we take it away. It's always there. That's part of what we cultivate faith in. That's why I said, if it was over the hill, if it was on top of the mountain, we'd all be climbing. Because it's so close, it's hard to see. It's hard to trust that. If it was so close, then why isn't it not already clear? It's a reasonable question. If the great heart of Avalokiteshvara is my heart, why am I not selflessly compassionate in every moment? That's a reasonable question. Buddhism has been studying that for many, many hundreds of years. The answer to that is not far away either. I suspect most of you have actually met that question and the answer this weekend. An old master says, while in the state of lucid and thought-free calm abiding, look directly into your conscious mind. It is a wakefulness for which no words suffice. It is not a definable entity, but at the same time, it is a self-knowing, aware emptiness that is clear, lucid, and awake. Now, sustain this without distraction. This is what is given many names, like Buddha nature, nature of mind, non-arising Dharmakaya, basic natural state, innate mind, original wakefulness. And so we begin by sustaining it for a moment. We call that mindfulness. And if you can sustain it for a moment, then you already know it's possible to sustain that longer. If you can take one step, as a toddler does, then they've already proven that they can take another. It's all there. To be lucid and thought-free, calm, abiding, on the path of non-attachment, non-accumulating, unburdening. And so when we talk about letting go, that just means don't actively grasp. Clinging is an action. That's why we get so exhausted. That's why samsara is exhausting. It takes so much work to let things be unto themselves in their own way. Being passive is just another form of that exhaustion. It's just being exhausted and defeated by it and giving up. It's just another attachment. Letting things be unto themselves, then when it is good to pick it up, pick it up. When it is good to put it down, put it down. When sadness comes, sadness is present. When grief arises, there's grief. When they pass, there's no sadness, there's no grief. It too does not live in the sadness and grief box and then let itself out to come visit you in a moment, and then when it passes, go back into that box. It doesn't come and go. What is this? Have you eaten? Yes, wash your bowl. In order to let go and redirect our attention back, or rather, when wandering, to redirect our attention back to the breath, to this present moment, to what is important, to our intention, to our vows. We have to let go of whatever we might be clinging to. That's why there's so much talk about letting go. And letting go simply means not grasping, not clinging. And because that's such a strong habit, it can sometimes take effort to actually just relax the mind. But it wants to. It wants to be relaxed. Will you please relax me? The mind is calling. I've been working so hard. And so, when the food comes, we open our mouth. When you open the paper and read today's news, and the sadness or the anger comes, or the grief or the despair, it comes. Open your heart. When the grief comes, open your heart. When it passes, Let your heart stay open and let it pass. When you have just read about a great flood, or that we're at the one-year anniversary of a tremendous world of violence in the Middle East, or in Ukraine, or in other parts of the country, or there is something happening at home or across the street. When it comes, open the heart, open the mind. When Hongren says, calm your senses, calm yourself and quiet your senses, he doesn't say put them to sleep. That's why we sit in this zendo with all of the senses open. Eyes too. It's too easy to think of zazen as, right, a retreat. Some of you might have told family or friends, you're going on a retreat. Oh, that's great. You're going to have such a quiet, peaceful weekend. Right? No disturbances. Right? Everything wonderful. But they didn't know that you were bringing yourself with you. Right? Hopefully you had some of those kinds of moments, right? That can be a real misunderstanding of Buddhism and practice. And then we can practice according to that, right? An escape, getting away, that's the solution. Find that mountaintop, go to that cave. Stop reading the news. It doesn't ultimately help, right? It's still there. It's still there, right where you are, closer than we think. A student asked a question of the Buddha and says, who is suffering? And the Buddha said, this is not a fit question. It's not an appropriate question. If I taught that there is a self that is suffering, then it would be a wholly appropriate question. But I do not teach that. If you were to ask, under what conditions does suffering arise? That is a fit question. And what he's saying is, for me to answer your question, I have to come and stand in your view and affirm it. There is a self that is suffering. There is a self that is creating suffering. There is a self that can put an end to suffering. He said, that is not a fit question based in not a clear view. But if you were to ask, how does this suffering arise? And so what he's also saying is you don't need a self. There doesn't need to be an agent, an owner, a possessor in order for suffering to arise. There just needs to be certain conditions. And that's what we create within ourselves and between ourselves. And so what if those conditions change? Opened up the mind ground, meets of itself. The first line of the poem, breakfast over, the direction is to wash the bowl. The footnote says, the opportunity goes by so fast, it's hard to meet it. I mentioned yesterday, I think that Buddhism, early Buddhism said that the moment, in one moment, or in rather one snap of the fingers, there's 64 moments. That's how fast it goes by. Right? Can't see it. And what Zhao Zhou is saying is, have you eaten yet? Yes. Wash your bowl. Can you enter into that finger snap? And so it begins with mindfulness. It begins with practice, washing your bowl while you're washing your bowl. I mean, just think about what we've been doing during this week and what we do in training. When you come to the zendo, you take off your shoes and you put them on the shoe rack. And sometimes it's clear that when a person was doing that they were not taking off their shoes. They were somewhere else. The shoes being on the shoe rack doesn't mean that that moment was there and alive for them. And then we come in and we walk in the zendo and we walk with our hands in shashu. All of this. How do you travel? How do you carry your body? How do you carry in a body that yourself in the body within practice that communicates something to the wandering mind? Now I'm walking. when it's time to walk, move your foot. Can I enter there? Now, from the outside, it's like, who cares? Like, what's the big deal? Like, I'm looking for the big stuff. Like, I've got serious problems going on. My heart is breaking. And you're talking to me about walking? And the Buddha said, yes, respectfully. Start there. Because if we can't start there, whatever we think the big stuff is, we'll stay far, far away. And in that, when the foot rises and falls, when you open your mouth and taste the food, there's an entering. And not just of mindfulness, of experience, but in the beginning of mindfulness, you bring your attention to the breath. And in that, we discover we're breathing. Essential. You can't live without it, but now we're actually breathing. And it's far away. It's dim. It's controlled. It's tense. It disappears. It comes back. It's fickle, but it's there. There are moments where it's there. And then as you keep bringing your mindfulness to it, it starts to come closer. It's not, actually, but it feels that way. And as it comes closer, it begins to change its quality. It's not actually changing its quality. It just seems like it. We're experiencing it more as it is. We are entering. And as we come closer, we enter into a state that Buddhism calls concentration, samadhi. It's very particular. And in that, the experience of what we call the breath, because that's just a word, seems to be transforming, but it's not transforming. It's just the breath. But our experience of it is. And as our experience of it changes, something in us is changing. And it's not just us, but it's our relationship with this. And we begin to think, is that happening with everything? Is that happening everywhere? Could that be? And then as we enter into that concentration in a deeper state, the mind loses its capacity to think. It doesn't need to anymore. There's nothing to think about. And that breath is no longer the breath. The Buddha said, because it is not a world, we can call it the world. Because it is not a breath, we can call it the breath, but it's not breath. That's a word. Now we're encountering something that's alive, that doesn't have a size, doesn't have a shape. It's not a concept. And as we enter into it deeply, more deeply, the very sense that I am breathing, I am concentrating, I am having experience, there's no room for that anymore. The Buddha said that all suffering arises from distance. The sense of distance that we create between ourselves and everything. And in that distance, everything becomes possible. Look around. People of war learned that a long time ago. There's a natural inclination to not kill each other. We don't want to do that. But if you turn another person into not a person, then it's easier. That was a learned lesson. And so it initiated an industry, a practice, a skillfulness of turning people into not people, to diminish that inclination to not do what we should not do. Distance. And strangely, we can create that same distance between we and ourselves. And then we become not a person. We become an object. And when we become an object to ourselves, we can do pretty much whatever we would do to somebody else or something else because we've become a something, a thing. And we don't treat things very well. And the Buddha said, all of this is an activity of our mind. And so how do we come closer? Because it's so close, it's hard to see. We practice coming closer because the distance has never been. Those moments of meeting come by so fast, and yet opened up the mind ground meets of itself. The footnote says, it's not just today. It's not just when we're sitting. It's not just in those moments when we're aware. And so, as practitioners, we practice the moment, right? And it's not just a word. Let it not be a word. And a good way to practice that is to become more aware of the dissatisfaction that is present in the distance. We tend to have filled that up with distraction, so we don't notice. Notice how when we are absent, it's painful, actually, if we will become that sensitive. We have that sensitivity if we will allow ourselves. And so that seduction of turning away starts to really shift. It's not so satisfying. And the natural fulfillment and satisfaction of this becomes real. So, some of the questions this weekend in Doksan were something of the order of how, when you're in a house on fire, can you be at peace? It's a valid question. So the teachings say, be free of love and hate, free yourself of the tyranny of like and dislike, of the dogma of right and wrong, and now wander freely within a world of love and hate, like and dislike, right and wrong. It's the idea that binds us. Master Huenong said, do not bind the sentient beings in your mind. Liberate them, free them. Every thought, every sensation, every emotion, every idea. And so to face what is not free within ourselves is actually very, not only helpful, it's essential. And then within that, to not grasp. And to realize ultimately what we think we need to liberate actually will liberate itself if we will so be so gracious. So for those of you who've come for the weekend, thank you for being with us, devoting. You could have been somewhere else doing something else, but you chose to be here and threw yourself into it. That helps everybody, right? That's how we can influence each other. And hopefully it will help you in some way. It may already be clear, it may come. Once a student came to Master Zhaozhou said, have you been here before? The student said, no, I haven't. And Zhaozhou said, please, have a cup of tea. And then another student came. Zhaozhou said, have you been here before? And the student says, yes, I have. And Zhaozhou said, please, have a cup of tea. And Zhaozhou's Jisha, who'd been standing there, said, Master, you told the one who'd never been here before to have tea. Why did you tell the one who had been here to have tea? And Zhaozhou said, Jisha, please, have a cup of tea.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.